It's more than just your output, more than a bike. When you hear your shout out, you know it's all right. Put on your magic pants and let's go. We're cruising into the power zone. Tip in, set yourself free. Come on and take a ride with me. You know what you need to know and what's it all about. Everything you need, it's on the Clip Out.
Welcome to the Clip Out Podcast, episode 333. This is Crystal O'Keefe.
I felt like it was a monster truck rally. 333. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. See Bone Crusher take on Bigfoot.
You do that great. You should be one of those guys, the voiceover guys. Yeah.
I have my moments.
You do. Lots of them.
Well. So I guess let's start by, are you leaving?
Yeah, I'm out. I'm not centered and I was trying to center.
We rarely are.
I know. Facts.
So I think we're going to start by talking about some changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sent out a survey a while back, a couple weeks ago, and just asking people thoughts about the show and things like that. And it seemed to be the overwhelming response is that this thing is turned into the Inagata DeVita of podcasts.
Which is true.
Without a drum solo. But here you go. So we are working on shortening the episodes. You might have noticed over the last couple of weeks, the run times have been getting shorter. And this week, it would be probably much shorter, except for the interview of the week. Andrew Sellers is pretty lengthy because he's talking about a VO2.
It's a portable VO2 tester.
There we go.
We'll get into all the details, but you're not going to want to miss this interview because it's like, for all the technical people out there that want to know how to track all of the things, you got to listen. And it's a lot.
And it's a way to do a VO2 max test, essentially, yes, in your own home instead of going to a place.
Yes.
And then using that data, and you're going on that journey, and you're going to talk about how you won't hear it in this interview, but in spoiler, you're already seeing impact
I am of
your running,
yes,
from things that you've learned from this thing. So anyway, so this episode, if you look at the runtime, might still be long, but you'll notice that the front end is a lot shorter, and that over the next few weeks you will see it contracting in length, hitting just the most important aspects of what's going on in the world of Peloton, because we feel like we're scaring off new people.
Yeah, because there's a lot of casual people with Peloton, yeah, now, like not as many diehards.
And
but we have something for you diehards.
Don't worry, this is a compound sentence, don't tune out. And so you know, when the podcast first started, if you go back and look at our early episodes, they were like 40 minutes long.
Yeah.
And so
hard to believe.
I know, right? And they just kept growing because Peloton was doing so much stuff, and they still are doing so much stuff. And there were lots of things that we used to talk about all the time when an instructor was on TV or in the news or in People magazine. And now that happens for multiple instructors, sometimes multiple times a week, right?
Yeah.
And so like that, not that we don't want to talk about that, but that's maybe not as big and exciting or as mass appeal as it used to be. And so we're trying to tighten up, talk about the biggest stories, and then the other stories will live over on our bonus episode, The Clipped Out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which we've been doing for a while now, people seem to enjoy. It's got a little bit of a looser vibe. And
it's also not going to be edited, so God only knows what Tom's going to say.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. And then, so that's over on our Patreon. So we've made a change to our Patreon, which is now it's $5 all you can eat. We no longer have, well, for the time being, the $10 tier and the $5 tier get the same thing. So if you're in the $10 tier and you want to keep giving us 10 bucks, we ain't proud. We'll take it. But if you want us to pivot to the $5 tier, absolutely. That's what it's there for. Because we're hoping more people will be like, okay, for $5, you'll get it ad-free. You'll get a weekly Clipped Out. You'll get any other bonus episodes we might throw together. You'll get, if we get it early, you get it early. You'll get all the things now for $5 a month.
And if you've been on the fence, you thought about trying it,
yeah,
there is also a 7-day free trial.
Right. So that's a good point. I forgot about that part where if you want to give it a shot, you can sign up for it for 7 days for free. And if you like it, great. And if not, no harm, no foul. Thanks for trying. enjoy the regular clip out.
Yeah,
right?
Like exactly.
The original product.
We're not going to be upset with you if you only listen to this episode. We get it. We understand. Yeah. We just want to have something that's available for everybody. And quite frankly, very transparently, it is expensive to produce this show.
Right.
And we cannot afford to have two episodes a week. We've talked about it. We've tried to figure it out, but it's just not in the cards right now.
Not a fully edited, produced show like this.
Exactly.
A lot of work goes into this. It's why the audio sounds so good. It's why our volume levels are the same. It's magic, right? And so a lot goes into it. And so anyway, the Patreon is, if you have the means, is a great way to support it. And we're hoping more people will choose to jump on board with all the extra stuff at the lower tier. So now it's $5 all you can eat. And the free tier absolutely still exists. So if you want to still know about the book club, things like that, absolutely go check out the free tier. That is still there and remains as such. Speaking of the book club.
Yes, I am so excited about this book. So this weekend, we'll talk about New York in a second, but we went to go see Brian in Connecticut. And so we had time on the plane. We had a lot of time in airports.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll hear more about that in the bonus episode. And I ended up finishing this book. It is so enjoyable. I love it. But we are going to be talking about this book on November 14th at 7 p.m. Central. And Sarah Goodman-Confino is going to be there. I have so many questions. I want to know who was the inspiration for Freddie, for example, because we know there was one. I've got questions like that. But I want to hear what everyone else is thinking. So please join us. We'd love to see you there.
I think it's also funny that you have finished the book. I started 2 days before you, and I am at the halfway point of the book.
You're almost done.
That's not almost done. That's halfway done.
You're halfway done.
So I'm a very slow reader.
Yes, and I am a very fast reader. And you tend to spend your free moments. There's a lot of them that you choose to play games, and I choose to read. Like on the plane, there's a lot of times you choose to be on your game, and I choose to read. So
if I read on a plane, I tend to just fall asleep.
Like you didn't fall asleep.
I did fall asleep, but I would have slept even more had I been reading the book. Not a reflection on the book. It's just
no. That's just you.
It's just any book. If I start reading on a plane, I'm just like out. Yeah. So, but yeah, I am also enjoying the book.
And Sarah Goodman-Confino has written a few books. So just to be clear, we are talking about Don't Forget to Write. It is not too late to join us. Please do.
Yeah.
All you have to do is go to patreon.com/theclipout and click join community, free for everybody.
Absolutely. And it is a quick read. Don't let me scare you, because I'm the problem there. Not the book. So also, we did go to New York. You got to go to PSNY and hang out.
Yes, I did. And I was super excited not only to get to go, I was able to get into two classes. It is possible, guys. and I had to work hard, but I got it.
One of the people in this picture actually got off the wait list.
Yeah, two.
Oh, two of the people.
Two. This went well. Kelly, you know what? It doesn't matter. But Kelly and Nikki are both in this picture, and they are both writers for the clip out. So it was a super special trip for us because, one, this was Kelly's very first time to the studio ever, and she's had her bike for a long time. And two, just to be able to be in person with these lovely ladies that I spend a lot of my day talking to. So it was very special. And Anna, I got to have a class with Dennis. I was in his country ride, which was an amazing ride. I loved the music. It was so fun. But I have to say the highlight for me was getting to see Anna again. I haven't seen her since like 2018. And I could not believe she actually remembered me. She asked about how I was after the accident. And I just like she knows a million people for her
right,
to remember that.
So many people that are crossing her Instagram feed in a day.
It's not like I send these instructors messages all the time, because I really don't. I try not to be that person that's like all needy and needs attention. So
look
I don't
at me.
Yeah. And I don't do that. And so for her to just remember that was just amazing. And then it was also Kelly's 400th yoga, so she got to celebrate that. And Nikki got a special shout out in Dennis's class because she has one of the best leaderboard names. My sports bra is stuck, and Dennis got the biggest kick out of that. Like, he was like, your sports bra looks okay to me, everything looks fine. It was great.
And then she immediately filed a complaint with HR.
No, because she didn't.
At her sports bra.
And that was in the pre-show. So
well laid trap, Nikki. Hat tip.
It was a great time. It was only a few hours, but what a great day. I was so exhausted, but like in all the best ways.
Awesome. Yeah. And I was in Connecticut at a brunch that was a complete and utter waste of my time.
Yeah. Yeah. For anybody who would like all the updates and all the dishing, oh boy, do we have a story for you.
Yeah. So you can hear it for $5 a month. So anyway, what, pray tell, do you have in store for people this week?
Well, we are going to talk about those brand new bikes that just came out. We're going to talk about how the Row is officially on sale in Canada. We have the announcement of the next earnings call that's coming out. We have a few bits of instructor news. We also have a visit from Dr. Jen.
Dr. Jen is back. I forgot to, all the things we were talking about, I forgot to talk about the fact that Dr. Jen is back.
Yeah, and we have a conversation about mental toughness, and I feel like most of us need this in our lives at some level. And of course, we're going to talk about just the other, there's a few other goings on. We're going to talk about Oprah and Gail. We're going to talk about Ludacris, and we're also going to talk about the TCO Top 5.
Awesome. Well, before we get to all that shameless plugs, don't forget you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, TuneIn, YouTube Music, even though we're not music. You can, while you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. Super helpful. Greatly appreciated. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theclipout. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's a great way to stay up to date on things throughout the week or interact with us if that's your jam. You can also find us on the aforementioned Patreon, patreon.com/theclipout, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content. You get ad-free episodes. If we get them early, you get them early. All sorts of fun stuff for only $5 a month at all levels. That's your highest price tier. So you can also, what else? Oh, YouTube. You can watch us on YouTube at youtube.com/theclipout. And you can also join our newsletter at the recently redesigned theclipout.com, where you will get emails and weekly reminders that we exist and why haven't you downloaded the show yet. So there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
We shall.
Peloton in the news.
Peloton Row is now on sale in Canada.
It is. It dropped last night, I believe. And
I hope it was...
maybe it was yesterday.
Hope it was packed properly. Dropping, it seems like that would be fragile.
Dropped on the internet.
Oh.
And it was cheaper than we expected. It came in at $35.70 instead of $38.24. Mm-hmm. But a little birdie told me that calls have already started coming in from the Canadian showrooms. Guess what? That's an introductory offer. Oh. And it's going up on January 26th.
So you got to be quick like a Canadian bunny. Do they have bunnies in Canada?
Well, there's snow bunnies, but I don't know if they live in Canada.
They probably have like a jackalope or something in Canada. Was the little bird who told you that a loony?
No.
That's the bird that's on their money.
Well, that would have been fun, but no.
So if you want to get the Row for $35.70, that's American, right?
Canadian dollars.
That's Canadian dollars. Translate this into American.
No, I this is straight off of the Canadian website.
Okay, so that's Canadian money.
Yes, Canadian dollars.
Which I think are called loonies.
Okay, I don't know. They call it Canadian dollars on the website. So somewhere I'm going with Canadian dollars.
Somewhere there's a Canadian listener that's like, oh, Jesus.
Well, I know we have several. So if anybody wants to educate us on the money situation, we would love to hear it.
Yeah. Maybe they're not saying, oh, Jesus. Do they have Jesus in Canada? Uh-huh. Is he everywhere?
Maybe they call him something different. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to think what Canadian you would call Canadian Jesus. We're going to hell.
I'm like, whatever you call it, I'm pretty sure you're about to offend someone and I'm going to get added for it. So if you could just ixnay.
If you're mad about the blasphemy, be sure and let Clip Out Crystal know.
Oh, yay. That's great. Can't wait.
Also this week, they teased it a while back, but Peloton has announced their limited edition bike colors.
So these also dropped this week, but get this, there's only 100 of each color.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Tom, if I were going to upgrade, which color would you like to see in our house?
I think I like the black one.
But the ones on the screen.
But I like the black one. It's so sleek.
I see what you're doing. It's not fun.
It's very fun.
I'm going for ocean.
That's, is that the teal one?
Yes.
Okay.
So.
That's... Yeah, I don't really dig any of these colors.
I should have known.
I guess the red one, maybe Sammy Hagar could buy that one.
Well, he better get to it quick because
Taylor Swift.
That's true. I don't think 100 is going to last very long.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, 100's not a lot, but it's also like, so like are there going to be very many people who already have a Peloton that are like, I'm going to swap it out for a red one?
I don't know. I mean, people are talking about it. I don't know. No. And there is no trade-in program that we have found. And it's also, just to be clear, this is only for the Bike Plus.
Okay.
And it's only $300 more.
I was about to ask, is it priced the same? So it's $300 for the paint job. Is it painted?
Yes,
powder coated. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a form of painting, right?
It is, but it's a long special, lasting.
Right.
It's not just somebody didn't just take a paintbrush and slap a coat of paint on it.
It's not spray paint. It's going to feel like the bike you get normally.
Absolutely.
Is just going to feel red.
Correct.
Or teal or gold. Is that what that is?
I called it sparkly sand.
Sparkly sand.
That's what it looks like to me.
Okay.
Nikki vetoed that and came up with a better version of that, which I don't recall what she called it, but
gold?
It was better than sparkly sand. I don't remember what she called it.
It's, gotcha.
If you scroll down, we can find it. But yeah, so.
Bronze gold.
Bronze gold. There you go.
So gold.
Yeah.
I had it right.
Yeah, it's close enough.
I would just like to point out that I was right.
Look, I feel like sparkly sand
take a moment
was appropriate.
Savor this.
So.
To bask in my public rightness.
Oh, my God.
It was gold.
So much.
Stay gold, pony boy. All the fans of the Outsiders are getting themselves a gold Peloton.
So I think it's fun. And so far, they're still for sale. So they haven't sold them yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, because I would think, like, if you haven't bought a bike plate and you're like, oh, let me look at the color ones. But I don't know that you're like, oh, that's worth $300.
Did you watch the video I sent you with the Cody thing that they did?
I watched part of it.
So they did, just for people who may not have seen it, it's a, they created a video that was like making
a parody of the Home Shopping Network.
Yes. Yeah. And it's called the Peloton Shopping Network, of course. And Cody was the host of it. And really, do I need to say more? It was hilarious. it was hilarious. Like it made me giggle.
And that's over on our YouTube channel. If you want to go check it out.
Yeah,
both
absolutely.
Versions, because there's a long version and a short version. So in honor of our new programming style.
It was nice of Peloton to do that, right?
Yeah.
They were like, that's such a good idea. No.
Also this week, Peloton announced when their earnings call will be for quarter one of fiscal 2024.
I guess we're just going back and forth now because now it's on a Thursday at 8:30. I know, 8:30 Eastern time. You know the drill. You can listen to the webcast. Just log in. It's free and stuff. But of course, we're going to give you all the details that you need to know. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good at all. I'll just go ahead and tell you that. It's going to be real bad. It doesn't matter what they say, based on what is happening elsewhere that we will get to. It's going to be bad.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real bad call.
That they're all bad anymore, it seems like.
Yeah.
Like
this one's going to be brutal.
Even when it seems like they're telling us good things, like, oh, that's good. These sounds like net positives and we're moving in the right direction. The stock market is like, the company is on fire.
Yeah, well, they're already
bikes
there.
Bikes are made out of AIDS. Like, it's like they're...
Yeah, they're already in that mindset so a week before, so you can imagine how it's going to be when the actual numbers come out. Yeah.
Just like, I would love to know, like, what would they like to hear? Like,
I don't know. I don't know.
We figured out a way to get the bike made for free using slave labor.
Yeah, one of the...
Now the stock goes up.
Some of the feedback was that people wanted us to talk about the business and like, this is as much into the business as I want to get to. Like, I could sit here and give you 15 things I think Peloton could do to make things better. But you know what? Everybody out there is going to have their own list of 15 things. And then everyone who likes to grump and complain will be mad when Peloton doesn't choose the 10 to 15 things they think it should be.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to do that. But we will talk about what's going on with the earnings call next week.
Sounds good.
Okay.
And after the break, we're going to talk about which instructor announced a U.S. book tour and who got featured in Broadway World. So stick around.
Man, there is nothing worse than when you buy a pair of sunglasses and then you lose or break them.
I would agree. So what do we do about that?
Well, that's where Gooder comes in. Their sunglasses are $25 each, so nobody likes to throw away $25, but it's a lot better than throwing away $100 or more dollars on a pair of broken sunglasses, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I have to say, that's not my favorite part about Gooder. My favorite part about Gooder is that when I run, they don't slip, they don't bounce, and they're 100% polarized. And they also come in like a million different colors and styles.
For your $25, you're not sacrificing comfort, safety, or style. If you want to support the show and pick up a pair, Gooder is giving the Clip Out listeners free shipping on their first order. Just go to gooder.com/TCO. That's GOODR.com and use code TCO to get free shipping.
Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Find your pair at gooder.com/TCO and use code TCO to get free shipping.
You know, so many people look to avoid carbs these days for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
And that means you have to give up so many great foods. But I think one of the hardest things is bread.
Yeah, because a lot of times the carb reduction also means that the texture changes. It means that the taste changes. So that can feel like a lot to give up.
And that's where Hero Bread comes into play. This is the first white bread I've had in
forever.
Years. I couldn't even tell you how long. Yeah. 10 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time.
I missed you, white bread.
Well, it's nice because Hero Bread, it's actually a large piece of bread, like you would say a normal size piece of bread.
Larger than normal.
Yeah. I mean,
like Texas toast size.
Yeah. And the texture is real bread.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's amazing.
I just had it as toast.
Yeah.
I didn't have to. It wasn't like, oh, it's a sandwich. Toast.
And you enjoyed it.
I did. It's 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 gram sugar, and it's high in fiber.
Don't give up on bread. Hero Bread is offering 10% off of your order. Go to hero.co and use TCO at checkout.
That's TCO at hero.co.
Instructors in the news.
Ben Aldis has announced a U.S. book tour.
Yeah, there's like 5 cities that he's hitting. Now, just so everybody knows, a few of the links have already dropped and you can go in and start buying tickets. There are a few that as of yesterday still have not dropped. So keep refreshing. Keep looking if you are in one of the cities that we do not have a link for. But there's going to be Chicago, Illinois, Boston, Washington, D.C., of course, New York City.
Well, of course.
And also New Jersey. So there's going to be 5 different dates, and it's going to be the week of November 13th. Also, I would say that Ben is probably going to be teaching a class while he is here.
One would think.
Yes. That is very exciting.
I don't feel like New Jersey should count as a fifth city on book tour.
It's another.
But if you live in New Jersey, you can get to New York. That doesn't count.
I guess based on the way that people talk about New Jersey versus New York, I think that they think that that's not true.
I guess. But I'm just like, go to Des Moines.
Or, yeah, St. Louis, Ben. St. Yeah. Louis. Don't go to St. Louis. No. I'm just kidding. It's not worth your time, Ben.
It's
don't
too dangerous. You take your life in your hands.
Just thinking of that. Who did we just see recently? Comedy.
The guy. So funny.
I need more to go on than
the guy that we just saw in the club, the comedian.
Oh, Mark Maron.
Mark Maron. Yeah. He was like, oh, St. Louis. I always get so scared to come to St. Louis. He always starts his bit that way.
Every time we've seen him, we talk about it. I was so scared to come here.
He's like, they're there. I love Mark Maron. He's so funny. Not as funny as you, Tom. Don't worry.
A likely story. His podcast is more popular, I'll tell you that.
Well, it is. You're not wrong.
So Bex Gentry is going to make her broadcast debut covering the New York City Marathon for ESPN.
That's ESPN.
Oh, that's another way to say it, I suppose.
And she will be at the finish line. So this is really exciting because she is going to be talking to the athletes as they cross the finish line. Of course, she will be interviewing all the top tier people, but she will be doing it throughout the day.
Right.
Just to make this more special, Allie on the Run is going to be there too.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time Allie on the Run has hosted the New York City Marathon and got to be part of ESPN. She's hosted before, but this time they're putting her on TV. And so she starts off at the finish line and then they take her down to the finish line where she gets to hang out with Bex Gentry and some other amazing runners. And she gets to be part of the film team. So that is exciting news about instructor and past guest update all rolled into one. We are super excited for Bex and for Allie, who is handling her cancer treatment very well. And we are excited to see it. We've been following that journey and she's handling it with grace.
That's awesome. I was going to ask, but you saved me the trouble.
Figured somebody out there might be thinking about it.
So Sam Yeoh, who we've mentioned in the past, was performing in the West End version of The King and I and got to play the King of Siam in a performance. He's been the understudy, but was featured in Broadway World.
Yeah. Rachel Weinberg, who is also a Peloton user, she got to interview Sam. And this is a great interview that she sat down for and talked to Sam all about his dream and being the first Thai actor. And it's just really neat and exciting. And congrats to Sam for being in Broadway World. I know that Broadway means a lot to him. And thank you, Rachel, for pointing out that this article had been published.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's really cool. Broadway World, I mean, that's like Rolling Stone, but for Broadway, right?
I know. I
mean, so that's a big deal.
It is. And I love this picture of him.
Like, that's a good
it's
picture.
It's so cool.
Even though you can't really tell it's him.
But, I know. But it's just cool so picture. Cool.
Yeah. And coming up after this, Dr. Jen returns. She's going to talk to us about how to develop mental toughness. So stick around.
I first started AG1 because I wanted to have more energy every day. And I was surprised that not only did I get that, but I also could focus better.
And you have a marathon to train for.
I do. Give me all the things. I replace my vitamins. I have prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, B vitamins, folate, magnesium. It's all in there. One scoop.
That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support.
Yes. And I like to recommend it to people because it's also NSF certified for sport, and I will not take a supplement that is not. If there's one product that I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we've partnered with them for so long.
If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1.
Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/clipout.
That's drinkag1.com/clipout.
Check it out.
Getting the psychological edge with Dr. Jen.
Joining us today via the magic of ZoomTube is Dr. Jen, licensed marriage, family, and child therapist and sports psychology consultant. You may know her from VH1's Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen, or VH1's Family Therapy with Dr. Jen, or her long-running radio show, The Dr. Jen Show. She's written 4 best-selling books, including The Relationship Fix, Dr. Jen's 6-Step Guide to Improving Communication, Connection, and Intimacy, It's Dr. Jen. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hello. It's great to be back. And thank you for being so patient while I practice what I preach and allowed myself some self-care time after the death of my mother. But
absolutely.
I appreciate you guys. And it's great to be back.
Well, we are so glad to see your smiling face again. I wanted to start with a question today. It's more of a general topic, but are there certain factors that can determine mental toughness? In other words, are there things that we can do to like improve our mental toughness?
Yeah, look, there are a lot of things. And if you really look at kind of history, a lot of the time people will feel like, well, if I went through trauma, somehow I'm going to be less mentally tough. But in my clinical experience, that is not the case. A lot of the time, overcoming a trauma can make someone tougher. And so I think it's really important that we really look at toughness as something that we strive to acquire, and that we look at our history as opportunities to develop our mental toughness.
Okay.
So I think that first of all, if there is something from your history that is holding you back and is making you less resilient, it's very important that you go to therapy to work through that. So that, like, you want to get yourself the baseline of kind of like where someone who hasn't experienced enormous trauma might be naturally by working through whatever your history is. And typically what I see clinically is people tend to move past that and become so incredibly resilient, because there's a sense when you've been through something really terrible and you have come out on top and you've managed to keep your commitments to yourself, you've managed to do your workout, you've managed to succeed in your career, whatever it is that is important to you, you've managed to have a family that for you, that is a success, a definition of success, that we tend to really value those things even more. We tend to appreciate them even more. So I think that that's kind of one of the first things. When it comes to resilience, I think also we have to look at what do we practice on a daily basis? And how do we speak to ourselves? So if our practices are not those of a person that's resilient, sometimes we got to fake it till we make it. Sometimes we have to show up even when we're not feeling so resilient, and that actually creates resilience. And then we also have to look at how are we talking to ourselves? You know, I'm a big fan of self-talk. And if we are coming at things saying, I'm not resilient, oh, I'm such a loser, oh, I suck at this, oh, I'm terrible, oh, that's what your vibe is going to be. That's what your energy is going to be. And that is going to make you less resilient.
I guess in a way, it's almost like strength training sometimes with trauma. Sometimes in that, like, that's, it's like tearing a muscle that can grow back stronger.
Absolutely. That's a great analogy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that's not what I'm here for.
But do you think people who have experienced great trauma have an ability to see realistically how tough they are? Like, do you think that they have a clear vision of that?
It depends on where they are in their process.
Okay.
And I think the more therapy you get, the more able to see that you are, because also it depends on what your trauma is. If you have a trauma that impacted your self-esteem and the way you see yourself. Let's just say, for example, you had a parent who was highly critical and verbally abusive. And what they were indoctrinating you to believe is that you are unattractive, or you're not smart, or you're not capable, or whatever that negative bullshit is that they were trying to make you believe, that you may have taken that on. But when you hit the point in therapy where you're able to go, oh, well, that person was actually pathological. I've been giving that person a lot of power that they don't deserve. That is a troubled person who is spewing their pathology onto me. I'm going to self-define. I'm going to be able to look at myself and see all of my strengths. And I'm also going to be able to see my weaknesses. And I'm going to be able to see them not in a way that's like, oh, I'm a piece of shit because I have that weakness, but rather, I have that weakness. Oh, how cool. I can build on that. I believe in myself, and I know that I can turn, as Robin often talks about, my weaknesses into strengths.
Yes.
And to me, that is resilience. Resilience is not having no weaknesses. Resilience is not having no trauma. Resilience is being able to bounce back after those things, being able to accurately assess without doing more harm to ourselves and growing from shitty things.
Yeah, I guess sometimes the trauma gets there are some types of trauma that are that gets internalized and makes you think less of yourself, where there are other sorts of trauma. I hate to use phrases like easier, but like it comes from more of an external source, and it becomes easier to identify it as not attached to your own self-worth. Like if you were an extreme example, if you're a POW where you went through trauma, but you're not like, the Vietnamese army told me I was bad. Like you don't bake that into your psyche in the same way that you do if your parents do that to you. And they're both bad, but in very different ways.
Yeah. Well, because there's an attachment to the parent.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Unfortunately, parents do a lot of the trauma that I end up seeing in my office. And because they are, our parents are our primary love objects, they're our first attachment, and they're also our first mirrors to ourselves, that a lot of the time it's very hard for kids and even later, even as adults, to be able to look back on that and say, oh, actually, that's not someone who I should let define me, because it's wired into our DNA to view our parents as mirrors. They're our first love objects.
Sure. Yeah. Whereas the Viet Cong, not so much. Yeah.
Not so much. Different kind of trauma.
Yes.
One last follow up. Can you still develop mental toughness without a perceived trauma?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think all people can develop resilience. I think that if you are someone who has not experienced trauma and you feel like you're not resilient, you want to look at, how do you define resilience? Where are you strong in that area that maybe you didn't recognize? And where are you weak? And what can you do to improve on that? And there are so many wonderful books about resilience and developing resilience that will give you kind of a roadmap depending on what specifically it is that you feel like you are lacking, but you don't have to have trauma to be resilient.
Are there really people who have no trauma? Like I view
that's
it as
why
like
I said perceived.
As like a spectrum. Obviously, there are some traumas that are more intense than others, but I can't imagine anyone who's gone through life with having no sort of bad thing happen to them.
There are very, very, very few people. I don't know many of them. I think I've met a couple in my lifetime, but I also think that, you know, there are things that sometimes people don't recognize as being traumatic for themselves, like sure. Maybe having a parent who didn't understand you, or having a narcissistic parent that maybe they didn't beat you, but you didn't feel understood. You didn't have your emotional needs met, and that can throw you off base in terms of kind of your foundation and your relationships and your love relationships. And sometimes you don't even know why. Sometimes you aren't able to recognize it because it isn't kind of the big sort of traumas that we think of physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, that kind of stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And also even things that people, I think, aren't shocked to hear about because they're common, can be traumatic. Like for example, growing up in a home where parents divorce, that can be incredibly traumatic. It is traumatic for, I would say, almost all children. It's very unusual to find a child that does not find that traumatic because their whole foundation, their whole family changes as a result of that. So, and I talk about this a lot in my book, The Relationship Fix. I have a whole chapter about childhood trauma, and I talk about how sometimes people don't realize something they've been through is traumatic for them and has affected them. And until you really examine it, it's hard to really understand it and understand how it impacts your relationship.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for all that. Until next time, where can people find you?
You can find me on social media at Dr. Jen Mann, two N's on Jen, two N's on Mann. And also I have a website, Dr. Jen, spelled out DocTorJenn.com.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Peloton Celebrity Sightings.
So a few weeks back, Oprah was spotted at the Peloton Studios.
It was
on 9/11.
It was on 9/11. It's real easy to remember.
Yes.
You know, we didn't know for sure. There was rumor. But turns out that rumor was true. And she was filming a 20-minute hike with Jess Sims. So
and
that's...
Gail.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Besties. I thought you said Oprah and Gail to begin with.
I didn't.
Sorry.
I just
sorry.
Said Oprah.
Yes. Oprah and Gail filmed a hike with Jess Sims. How exciting is that? Apparently, Oprah and Gail both love to hike. And so this was the perfect workout for them.
I thought it was interesting you pointed out about Gail's outfit.
Yeah, that is not a new Peloton outfit. So.
And you don't say that to shame her.
No,
you
no,
say
no.
that to praise her.
I do, because that shows that she loves Peloton and buys the Peloton clothes on her own. She didn't just go over to the store. They didn't just hand her Peloton
clothes.
They
didn't give her Peloton swag to wear on the hike. They did, and she didn't just run to the store and buy something real quick so she had some. Like, she went in the closet and picked out something that she clearly bought a while back because she digs Peloton.
Yep. And I love that.
I love that you know that.
And Jess Sims did an amazing job, of course, handling it. And then this, you know, just like being excited and showing them the love.
Yeah.
And,
like, how excited must everyone else in that class have been with Oprah and Gail both there? That must have just been quite a moment for the rest of the people in the class, wouldn't you say?
So the rest of the people were the Oprah staffers.
Oh.
Yeah. There were none of us regular people. In that class.
Oprah does not want to smell other people's sweat.
No. She's like, you select few, I will smell.
She's Oprah and she doesn't have to. I like the headline, whoever came up with, you get a burpee and you get
that
a burpee.
That was all Nikki.
And you get a burpee.
That's so, all Nikki.
Well, she's... done. Help her be Nikki. It has my seal of approval because you care.
I bet she does.
Peloton Artist Collaboration.
The latest artist series features Ludacris.
Man, people are excited about this one. People were sharing the crap out of this, like just left and right. I mean, people, every time I looked, there was more sharing.
People love Ludacris.
And not one person said who? That's great. I will be honest. I am not like really up on the list of Ludacris songs.
Right.
He's been around a long time, so I feel like if I heard the music, I'd know it.
Probably. He's got to have at least one or two that even somebody like me would know.
That's what I feel like,
I just know him from Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I don't even have that, because I hate those movies.
I hate them too, but I have to go see them because they're real spoilers.
I know.
And they're bad.
Oh my God.
I don't
understand. The one where they were in space was just too much.
They took a car to space.
Like, you just, how am I even supposed to suspend?
They were dead
serious. And they kept talking about how, like, it could work. Like, it would happen. Like, this all made sense. And it was like, is this supposed to be funny? Because you're not laughing.
Right. Like, it's not, yeah, like, it's, they're so bad. They're so bad. I hate them so much.
Okay. But Ludacris.
Yes.
Ludacris is not bad, and everyone is really excited about it. And I love when we have artist series that everybody rallies around and gets really excited about.
It
makes me happy.
Yes.
So for everybody who's going to be taking these classes, I want to hear which was your favorite, and I want to know which person taught it that was your favorite. They all have slightly different playlists.
New content.
And now we get to the TCO Top 5, where we put out the Eagle Call and ask you what your favorite classes of the week were, and then we compile them and spit them back out at you. So maybe people that are looking for a class, there's so much to choose from, it helps them kind of find the things that people have already vetted.
Yeah. And I tell you what, everybody was super chatty this week and I love it.
Awesome.
Past guest Beatrice loves TV.
Oh, yeah.
She had the favorite foam rolling. This was from August 1st. It's a 10-minute foam rolling with Rebecca Kennedy. And she says she is attempting to get better at incorporating more foam rolling and or stretching daily. And this class felt so effective. It's definitely going to be part of my regular routine. Good job, Beatrice.
Yeah.
Then we have the favorite Peloton ride. This what came from 928. It was a 45-minute Power Zone EDM with Olivia Amato. Listener Catherine took this class last week, and she said, I'm used to Olivia earning consistently off-the-charts difficulty ratings due to her love of out-of-the-saddle high cadences. But this ride was instead of more of a stay-in-the-saddle and grind ride. It was a great change of pace for Olivia fan who also loves Jess King's Sweat Steady rides and, of course, had a great playlist to boot. So that is very high praise.
Oh, was it Canadian? Because it was to boot?
No. Oh. And then we have the favorite walk plus run. This came from Jess Sims on October 19th. It was a 60 minute. So this is actually her first ever walk plus run. And Kara Grossfield said, hands down, Jess Sims 60 minute walk plus run from Thursday is the best long class available. Karen Smith said, I just did this 60 minute walk plus run. It was so good. It wasn't killer like some of her classes, but still Jess Sims hard. Great sweat and IPR'd. Highly recommend. And Trish Lalonde, who's one of our TCO tipsters, added that Jess's 60-minute run walk from last Thursday, we need more 60-minute classes. She was super motivating, and having 60-minute format mat allows you to really settle into the flow of the class. Phew. Then we had the favorite Peloton run. This one was from Susie Chan on October 21st. It was also a 60-minute, and it was a pop run. Rebecca Allen said that she found that my favorite cardio class was Susie Chan's 60-minute pop run. She has the most amazing ability to make a longer class just fly by. And she doesn't do it by telling a million stories or jokes. It's her superpower. But the class had an amazing playlist, and the class members were so enthusiastic. And Mariana Fernandez was in the class, too. Oh,
cameo.
Yes. Also, our Unstackable boot camp. This was from October 21st. This is also from Jess Sims because it's a Saturday 60. And this came from Tiffany Couts. Jess Sims' most recent Saturday 60. This was a music-based class, so not as hard as her other advanced versions, but still just hard enough I would never dream of stacking it. I usually start my Monday mornings with one of these, a great way to start the week, and there's usually a whole bunch of people taking the most recent one at the same time with lots of high fives. Aw, how amazing. So that is all, folks. Lots of great recommendations from the community. Keep them coming, guys. We love to hear it.
Yes, thank you so much for the feedback. And if you haven't chimed in and you're looking for a class, this is a great way to go find one.
It is. Good list.
And coming up after this, we're going to talk to Andrew Sellers. He's created a VO2 Max portable at-home unit device thing. And he says it much better than that. He'll talk to you about why that's important and how it can help improve your running and fitness stuff. Did I get all that right?
Ish.
Ish.
Close enough.
Nobody expects me to get it like technically right.
But it's, there's lots of great information here, and you're going to find out why VO2 Max is actually not necessarily the gold standard or the test you should be looking for. And we're going to dig into why. I know.
What?
I know.
That's crazy. I have to hear why that's true.
Well, you have the next hour to do so.
Okay. Well, stick around.
Checking in with the Peloton community.
All right. So we're going to try something different today. I'm going to do the introduction. Usually it's Tom. So joining us on the Zoom tube today, we have Andrew Sellers. Now, Andrew is a part of VO2 Master. And we'll explain what that is and why that's important. But I am super excited about this interview. I am really into all the things that you guys are doing. So, Andrew, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the invitation. It's an absolute pleasure to see you guys.
Well, I want to start with, okay, just give us a little bit of brief intro onto what exactly VO2 Master is, because I think people are going to hear that and they're going to be like, oh, VO2 Max. That's what they're going to assume, but it's not.
That's what I did.
So VO2 Master is a small Canadian company. We created the first ever wireless portable VO2 testing equipment. So this is a face-worn device that allows you to measure your oxygen consumption, which is what VO2 is. And it allows you to move around and be portable with it. So if you remember tons of movies, and anybody who is in sports physiology or exercise physiology at university has probably seen big lab equipment with the hoses and tubes and wires and a mask, and watching people train on a treadmill or on a stationary bike with all those tubes and wires. We took that lab grade equipment and condensed it all down to just a face worn mask with all the information that's collected out of that mask being sent Bluetooth through to your device, to a phone or a tablet, and be able to collect it and see that data live right on your phone.
Yeah. And you make that sound really simple, but it is so cool. Like, so you guys were kind enough to send me one to try, and it is amazing to be able to like do that on a treadmill, do it on a rower, do it on anything. And you don't have all those wires and hoses hooked up to this big cart. And also, I was so intimidated when I opened the box because there's a lot of things there, but it's so simple. Like, you guys made it so easy. If I can figure it out, literally anyone can. It was very impressed.
That was the original vision 8 years ago, was to make it portable, affordable, and simple to use. And that was what every conversation that came out of our initial, when we put the company together, that was the goal. And that has been the longstanding and permanent goal of the company, is to make it simple to use. The portable was the first challenge, was to pull all those wires and cables and to make it manageable and just have nothing extra other than the mask. The second was to make it somewhat affordable. And it's not as affordable as we would have as our original goal, but we are hoping to continue to bring the price down. But sits currently, I think the current offering is at $6,000 US, which we think is affordable for clubs and gyms and some private people. Our long-term goal is to have a user-friendly device that is in the market that allows individuals to own one without a huge hit to their pocketbook. And then the simple to use was the last piece of that puzzle that we were really struggling all the time to improve, to make it easier and easier to use. And I'm glad your first experience with it out of the box was, it is intimidating when you first open the box, but I'm glad you found it simple. That makes me happy because that was the goal.
She was certainly intimidated when she opened the box. She was just like, oh dear. And I have no mechanical capabilities.
None.
Whatsoever. When she showed it to me, I was like, well, that looks like fun for you.
Yeah, he walked away. He was like, "Am I?"
Yeah, I don't need to know how much I'm breathing. I'm okay.
And just for folks who need a little bit of background, I originally introduced you and your partner Peter over on the MetPro Method, which is a different podcast that I host, and I was absolutely fascinated because you guys were talking all about why a VO2 max is not the most important piece of information. And coming from the world I've come through, background of Peloton, and no real athletic ability, I am complete like, oh, I'll just try something new. I was completely surprised to hear that, because that's what I've always heard is the gold standard. So I would love to hear your take for this audience on why VO2 max is not the gold standard, not the best metric for everyone.
Sure. So you're opening up a huge can of worms, which I love talking about. This is my passion. You're talking my love language now. So VO2 max is a gold standard, and it's a gold standard for certain metrics and for tracking certain information. But it's a really limited piece of the information. Now, all the testing that is done with VO2 testing equipment, the number called VO2 max is the highest amount of oxygen that the body can consume during exercise. And it's specific to the athlete. It's also specific to the exercise they're doing. And it gives some indication as to what they are, where they're at genetically, and also where they're at in their training cycle and their training history. But it's a single number at the very, very top end at the highest intensity possible. All of the other data on how their bodies work to get to that point happens below maximum, and happens at all the different training zones, happens at a walking pace, happens at a jogging pace, happens at a running pace, happens at marathon pace and 10K pace. There are oxygen consumption values at all of those along that track before you get to maximum that are fascinating to look at. And the other piece of that information that contributes to that is how fast you breathe, and how much air you move, and how much blood flow your heart pumps out. And that's the cardiovascular, cardiorespiratory dynamics that we can measure right from rest, doing a resting metabolic rate, which our device can do, all the way up to maximum. And we can look at that data and watch how that changes with training. And this is why, as important as VO2 max is to some people, the other information is far more valuable to most people. And that is because we can use that data to help assess people, how their bodies are creating the energy, how they're moving through and how fast they're able to metabolize fuels to make energy, and how fast they're able to run with those fuels. And then we can look at how to train them to make them faster or make them better at walking paces, jogging paces, running paces, way below VO2 max. And realistically, for 99% of people, it actually doesn't matter what their maximum value is. It matters how they're using oxygen at lower intensities. And that's why it's so much, for me, it's so much more fascinating to not look at, to ignore the max and look at all the other data, because there's a ton more data than the max number, which is really the only reason anybody uses max number is because it's super simple and it's fairly easy to understand and it's really easy to compare people and it's fun to compare.
It is. It is. Yeah. And we'll get into this a little more later. But whenever I was trying, like, there's so many different thing protocols that you can use for different testing to get to a VO2 max. And so the first thing you had me do when I got the machine, the VO2 Master, was try it with a few different protocols. And I had vastly different VO2 maxes depending on what that protocol was, which was the first thing I found fascinating because I just thought apples to apples. If everybody says VO2 max is what you should be looking at, then it shouldn't matter how you get there. You're going to get there the same. But that's not true. And the other thing that I found fascinating about what I learned from you is that the lower numbers, seeing how those numbers play over time, are what is going to help get faster. And as I have told you, and Tom's heard me say this for years, if I can't get faster on my own, I've tried. Like, I've tried every single thing out there. And if this process can make me faster, it can make anybody faster, because like, I am just like the slowest plodding person ever when it comes to running.
That's going to be a super fun. And just for, again, for transparency, and you and I have sort of taken on a little bit of a fun project to see what we can do to help you get to and complete the New York Marathon next November, which is over a year away, but super excited. I'm really excited to think about that process and to see what we can do to actually put this device into reality for you and actually make it beneficial and show the people that you connect with and your family what we can do with it and try and keep it fun, make it a fun device and a fun testing sessions and help your training to actually, like you say, improve it so that you can actually get through that marathon unscathed and with some pride to be able to finish such a great goal.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. And so I'll let you kind of jump in to give whatever information you think is most helpful for people. But when I was doing the different reports or the different protocol, I found from you that like doing, because my goal is working on a marathon, this could be different for other people because it depends on what their goals are. And that's why this testing is so specific to each person. But it was like, OK, well, I needed to do longer tests, not just a minute at a time. So like typically if you go into a lab and you say, give me a VO2 max test, they're going to do a step test and it's going to be like basically every 30 seconds or every minute, they're going to increase the speed and maybe the incline until you max. And so first of all, that's very humbling when you do that. But second of all, it's a very short test when you do it that way. And yes, it gives
it
you
depends
your
on the person taking the test.
Okay, it's a very short test.
It's short for a reason as well. And whether you do this on a bike by wattage and just go 100 watts, 150, 200, 250, or on a treadmill where you're increasing the speed or increasing the incline or a rowing ergometer, you can do the same thing. You can do this on in any sport, really. That's a repetitive sport. You start at a low intensity and you increase the intensity until you get to a maximum value. And the reason they're keeping the test short is because they don't want you too tired. If you do an hour-long test, by the time you get to your maximum, you've already done 45 minutes of steadily increasing work. You're going to be tired, so you're not going to reach your maximum. So really what they want to do is a short warm-up and then a really rapid increase in intensity to try and get you up to some perceived maximum effort. And that those are called step tests. And you can do a step test that takes an hour, or you can do a step test that takes 10 minutes. And all you do is you play with how long the intervals are and how fast the intensity increases. And that's the basics of all graded. They're called, in the science literature, they're called graded exercise tests, GXTs. In the layman's terms, they're just step tests. And they're a really good way to help you assess because you can repeat the same step test over and over and over again. You can use exactly the same wattage, exactly the same intervals, and you can test yourself every day, every week, every month, every 6 weeks. It doesn't matter how often you test it, but you can overlap those results and see yourself improving. And that's what I'm hoping to be able to show you through the results of our testing, is that that's what we're going to be using to assess your performance improvements in training. Really, the only test that really matters to you is how you do in the marathon next year. But we don't want to wait till next year to see if the training that you're doing is actually working. We should be able to test that. And we should be able to test it regularly enough that you can actually have confidence that you're actually improving. And you don't need to wait till next year to find out if you've actually done all the work that you need to do. So these graded exercise tests or step tests, I'm going to suggest we do them every 4 to 6 weeks. Now, you can do them every day. And when we coach high performance athletes, we actually quite often start every training session with a step test.
Really?
And we don't go to maximum. We just do the first 5 steps. And if we do them as 3-minute steps, that's a 15-minute warm-up. And in that warm-up, we are now actually collecting data to see whether their body is actually recovered from the previous workout and is ready to do the next set of challenges that we're going to put to them to help them train. And the value of step tests, I really can't understate the value of step tests. Is this is your ability in training to look at how your body is responding to the intensity that you're setting and to see if your body is actually reacted to previous training, and how is it on the day that you're doing the step test? How is it recovered from your sleep that you've done? How and the fuel that you've taken in and all of the stresses in your life all come down into back into your exercise to see how your body responds to that, those intensities.
And one of the things I found so fascinating was when you were looking over the first few that I did, you could see, like, one, you could see whenever I had a not rested day, like after I'd been working out like 5 days in a row, you were like, oh, this one's not as well rested. You could point to exactly where it was. And it was so fascinating because it was true. I had done that workout and I was just like, I was really tired. I wasn't feeling it. I couldn't keep my heart rate down. And you could point to it exactly. But the other thing that fascinated me was that it looked like that I would get anxious every time I increased the step because my heart rate would go up. And that was fascinating too, because I do that. I get anxious. I'm like, oh, I got to go up and intensity is going to be hard. And I like get all nervous about it.
Maybe we should pull up a couple of those and share them and take a few minutes to talk about those.
Yeah, I'd love that. That'd be great.
Okay, let me share my screen here.
Yeah, because I'm interested to know, like, I don't really fully understand what exactly you're measuring. Like, is it the quality of the oxygen? Is it how fast she's breathing? Like, I don't really understand.
I will show you exactly. Let's take this full screen. So this is the first test you did. So this is straight out of the box. You putting the mask on, hitting go. And I gave you a couple little challenges. You were going to do 1-minute steps. Starting at a really low intensity and getting faster and faster and faster and faster and faster on the treadmill until you reached, and I told you, you didn't need to go to max. You go as fast as you could, stop whenever you wanted.
Yep.
And so this is the test that you did. So this is a summary page, and we'll come back to this in just a second, but let me just move this over here so I can see it. So this is a visual representation of what you did. You warmed up at a steady intensity, which turned out to be 100 watts. It's over here. And you went up every minute. You did 10 watt increment. And you can see you did about 12 steps. And at the top here, I think you hit 220 or 230 watts. And you were able to measure, because you were doing it on a Peloton treadmill, I think.
Yep.
So you were able to see watts. And that was, and you actually set the treadmill to determine how to increase that.
Yep.
And so there's a couple of things that were interesting about that. First of all, it's great that you're able to use watts on a treadmill, because then it doesn't matter what the angle is, and it'll adjust your speed and your incline to keep the wattage where you want it. The challenge with that is that it's changing the incline and the speed at different things, and so it's not going to be consistent each time. So we'll talk about that another time. But that was the test you did,
right? Yeah,
100
yeah.
watts going up to somewhere about 220 every minute, getting harder.
Yep.
The question that was on the table is, what are we actually recording? So what the mask records is this data down here. And this is, there's a whole just funky names for short. This is tidal volumes. This is how big a breath you take. So each breath you take, we measure how big that breath is. We record it in liters, and you can see that number here. So You can see roughly the yellow line. You're roughly breathing about a liter a breath. And you can see there's lots of variability to how big a breath you take.
Yeah.
We also measure how fast you breathe. That's a respiratory frequency. So that's your breathing rate. Like a heart rate, it's your breathing. It's how fast you're breathing. And you can see those numbers here. You're starting somewhere just above 20. And again, lots of variability, sometimes down as low as 15 and sometimes as high as 25. And it bounces around, but it sits around 20. And then as you start getting higher and higher intensity, your breathing rate increases. And so does the tidal volume. So you start breathing deeper and you start breathing faster. Those two numbers together, if you take how fast you breathe and how big a breath you take, if you multiply those together, you get how much total you breathe. And that's ventilation. And that's the dark green line. So light blue times yellow equals green. And this number is given over here. So again, when you're breathing 1 liter per breath and you're breathing 20 breaths a minute, you get a ventilation of 20 liters per minute. And that's just the value. So ventilation, and you can see what happens. Interestingly enough for you, your ventilation stays relatively stable for even though you're increasing intensity, your breathing stays stable for a period of time, and then it starts to jump up. Mm-hmm. And then from this point on, there's a steady, pretty steady increase in ventilation. This is you breathing faster and faster, deeper and deeper, faster and faster, until you get to that overwhelming feeling where you're just panic breathing and you can't actually go any faster. That's for you on this day. This was your max effort and you went, I can't even do it. And you can see that you only did about 30 seconds of that last one. And then you called it quits. You're like, I'm done. I'm turning this thing off. And you went back down to 100 watts. And at that speed, you're probably actually walking and you just walked it off and you walked for another 5 minutes. And you can see your breathing slowly comes down. Or it actually comes down quite quickly. Your breathing comes back down and then hits a baseline that's pretty similar to where you were before you started.
Yeah.
So this is the respiratory data that VO2 Master collects. And then within the cell of the VO2 Master, we can also measure out of that, all that breathing data, we actually can pull out how much oxygen you're consuming. And this is, it's a super simple measurement that's underlying the really complex things that are going on in your body. But all we do is we measure how much air you're breathing in. And we know that that air that you breathe in, because we calibrate it, it sits at about 21% oxygen. So what you breathe in is not 100% oxygen. The air that you breathe is approximately 21%. It changes with altitude and it changes with where you're living in the world. It's still roughly 21%. It doesn't change a whole lot from that, but it does change. And that's why we calibrate it each time. You breathe that air in. You use some of that oxygen. Our bodies are not really efficient. So we breathe out about 18% at rest, 18 or 19%. So we breathe in 21% and breathe out 18 or 19. You're only actually using 2% of what you're given.
That's fascinating.
But that value, the amount that you've breathed times the difference in what you breathe in versus what you breathe out, is the oxygen you've consumed. And that becomes this blue line, which is hidden behind your... So this graph here is showing your heart rate and your oxygen consumption. And they pattern fairly similarly. There's more of a split at the top, which has physiologic reasons to it. But for you, just like your heart rate increasing with intensity, so does your oxygen consumption. So the harder you work, the more oxygen you consume to produce that energy, to produce the exercise, to meet the demands of that treadmill that's running at a certain speed, until again, you reach a max. So this for you on this day, that's your VO2 max right there, just before you stop and start walking again.
I was like, I'm done.
I know. So lots of information in there. But this is, again, and this is what we'll spend maybe some time over the next, as we're reviewing data in the future, this is what we'll look at. And this is what we will be looking at to see what's happening with your body at different intensities. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So you now that you have this information of like, here's how you're breathing and when, like, now what? Like, yeah. What do you do with all that? Yeah.
So this is the fun part. And this is where a lot of people will go to a testing center or a lab, right? And this is what we are trying to make easier and easier for people, to help them. And we are starting to incorporate some AI tools and stuff to help, so that this printout will give you, and you can actually already see on this printout, this relatively simple look, is there's these lines, this VT1 and VT2 and VO2 max. And again, historically, VO2 max was the number that everybody records and cares about because it was a simple number. So if I go back up to the front page, the first page, it tells you your VO2 max tested on that day doing that particular protocol was 31. And we ranked you. I hate doing this, but it ranks you somewhere along here.
Other reports get worse. It's okay.
I thought it was interesting, though, that when you're gauging the quality they do, like, you know, the top end is superior. I thought having the very end be suck was a bit much. Like that.
It does not say suck.
I did want to change these words. So I'm going to apologize because this is our company's response to what people have requested. And so, again, for me, VO2 max isn't important, but this is what the majority of the population use as a grade. And so these parts over here are much more interesting to me. So we will move away from this, but this is your VO2 max score compared to the general population and really compared to most people that are tested historically were university athletes who are already on some sort of varsity team, right? So the data was always skewed way up here because you've already self-selected for young, healthy individuals who are competitive athletes.
I
would think that like people who aren't concerned about health and fitness, they're not taking this test. So like you're also kind of the people that are going to bring the number down on the really low end are always going to opt out.
That's true. Yeah.
So fascinatingly enough, there is data now coming out as we've started to make testing more available to more and more people, is that there is some very good literature showing that VO2 max is closely associated with all-cause mortality, which means the higher your VO2 max, the more likely you are going to survive incidents of stress. So the lower your VO2 max is, the more likely you are going to die from cardiovascular respiratory diseases. And so just like you just said, we haven't tested people down here because it's a hard, what you did was a really hard test. Getting on a treadmill and walking until you can't walk any faster, then you start running. And then you can't, until you can't run any faster and you are breathing so hard you can barely survive. That's a really hard test. So we don't do that. You're exactly right. We don't do that for medical patients. But you can do, using some mathematical formulas, you can test people and test what their oxygen consumption is at moderate intensities and extrapolate that to what they would be able to do at their maximum if you wanted to push them. Now, there's obviously dangers to doing that, to testing maximally unhealthy patients. So we don't do that. But we do test them at rest and we do test them up to some strict guidelines. And that, some of that research is being done at Duke University using our device. And they're actually looking at congestive heart failure patients and COPD patients and looking at how they can improve their VO2 max, because improving their VO2 max has a correlation to improving their longevity and their life. So yeah, there's fascinating research coming out, partly because it wasn't done before because it was so expensive to do it, because you had to take these people to a lab and hook them all up to fancy equipment in the lab. And now we can take the mask around and put it on someone at their bedside. And you can actually have them on little foot steppers at the side of the bed, and they can actually do tests in the hospital. So our device isn't medically graded yet, but that's something that we're working on in the future. And it's being tested in the medical setting for exactly doing that, those exact tests to look at what happens to people whose VO2 maxes or their presumed or extrapolated maxes are down here in that very low end. But you're totally right. This scale is skewed because this is historically the people that we were testing.
So if the idea is that if you can get your VO2 max higher, it increases your longevity or likely to survive medical stress events. I mean, is it as simple as like you just make sure people in certain settings just get more oxygen? Like beyond the exercise, could you just put an oxygen mask on more people? Would that get them over the hump? I'm always looking for the shortcut. This is
there have been studies done on what happens if you give people supplemental oxygen, and absolutely they perform better. So yes, if you want to perform better as a during your test, if you wear supplemental oxygen, you will perform better. And you will have a higher number.
Well, I didn't mean necessarily during the test. I meant that, like, if you're an elderly person who has congestive heart failure, I mean, obviously they give people oxygen and
And that's exactly why they do it, is because your body is so fundamentally driven by oxygen demands that giving people who are at the end of life oxygen helps them survive and helps them get through their days. So the typical people we see are the people with really bad lungs, so they don't have the ability to actually move oxygen from the environment into their bodies. So they're given supplemental oxygen to help them with that process, to drive the oxygen inside to provide enough oxygen for their cells.
But does that mean that, like, maybe we should be giving people oxygen sooner or in different settings that, like, that would make them survive other things that maybe aren't initially linked to, if your lungs are doing bad, it's pretty obvious, give somebody oxygen, right?
Yeah.
But like, if there's something else going on, does maybe upping your oxygen
solve all the world's problems, Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah. Right now.
So, that's, so my solution to solving the world's problems is having people exercise. Because you're way better off training the system,
right,
to deal with the oxygen you have than to give the system more oxygen and allow the system to continue being broken. And that's really what you're doing. If you supplement with oxygen, you are telling the system that it's okay as it is. We'll just give you more oxygen to help you survive.
You're helping in the short term, but you're actually making it weaker in the long term because your body's like, well, I don't need to do that. You're going to give it to me.
Exactly. And that's exactly the benefit. And that's why exercise, endurance exercise, is such a huge benefit to every human being. We were all built to move, and we all have the innate ability to improve that system that helps us survive, our cardiovascular and cardiorespiratory system. And that the heart is a muscle. It only develops from exercise. When you put that muscle under small amounts of stress every day, that it actually builds strength and builds size. The heart, just like any other muscle in the body, can get stronger and get bigger in a healthy way.
Hmm.
The respiratory system is the same way. The way you breathe is challenged and improves with training, with challenges. And we weren't built to sit in chairs and sit in offices and not move. We were built to move. And our system degrades over time when we don't move. And that's why anything that you do to improve your ability to keep moving every day is so vitally important to long-term health and survival, is actually moving. And the worst thing you can do is to sit and do nothing. Hmm. And that, unfortunately, that's in North America, that's what most of us do. We sit and do nothing all day, and we really need to be out moving all day. And that would be a much healthier way to address our systemic problems than supplementing with oxygen.
Yeah, Tom.
But I like the way you think.
Like, what's the easiest way for me to live longer?
Walk more.
The least amount of effort.
Have this debate while we're walking.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
That's the best way to do it.
Okay.
So then, if her goal is to get faster, what specifically does she do that this helps guide?
Right. So this first page of this report is really a summary of all those things I just showed you. So this side of the numbers is all your maximum value. So we talked about how big a breath you took, and your biggest breath is 2 liters per breath. The fastest you breathed was 41 breaths a minute. And when you multiply those together, you get this number here, ventilation, 82. So those are your maximum values. That was your maximum heart rate, 167, your maximum power. We said you did that 30 seconds at that top level was 230 watts. So if she was only worried about running really, really fast for really short distances, these numbers would be at her upper limit of what she can do. Those are going to change over time. And this is why, again, why VO2max is used so much, is because if we see a change in this, it's the ceiling of how high she can go at that top ever. And it's super simple. If she goes to 35, if next 6 weeks from now, she gets a VO2max of 33, we can say, wow, she improved by 2. And that's fantastic. And she's moved slowly up this line up here, and we can get her towards fair, good, and maybe even excellent over the next 6 months, 12 months. That would be our dream goal, is to be somewhere up here, to move this from this ranking here up towards this ranking here, right? And there is some evidence that VO2 max is associated with marathon times. It's closely, more closely associated with 5K and 10K times, But there is some correlation that you are being hindered. If your VO2 max is down here, there is going to be a tighter limit to how fast you can move over a long distance of time. But more importantly is what happens at these lower intensities. So this is where realistically, so these VT1 and VT2 are just fancy terms, are ventilatory threshold 1 and ventilatory threshold 2. And ventilatory thresholds are breathing thresholds that you will feel if you are doing a slow step test and you pay attention to how you're breathing, you can actually feel these. So below VT1 is very controlled, easy breathing. That's how you're breathing now when you're sitting, having a conversation. It's how you would breathe when you're doing an easy stroll, walking pace. As you start to exercise and you start to breathe faster and harder, you will start to feel a need to breathe that little bit. And as soon as you hit that, that's called your VT1. So it's moving from a very easy breathing pattern to a slightly more challenging. This is where you can still speak in a long sentence, but it becomes a little bit more conscious. You actually have to take a deep breath to be able to speak in a sentence. That's the easiest way to sort of talk about what VT1 is. As again, you get harder, faster and harder, you're moving. VT2 is now the point that you've been breathing for as the step test increases for the next few minutes. You get to a point where now it becomes challenging to, you wouldn't be able to hold a long sentence. You might actually be struggling just to get a couple words out before you have to take the next breath. That's your VT2. Now, these are calculated based on this, all this data here, and our, in the background, our algorithm figures out where your VT1 and VT2 is based on looking at this. And you can actually see this because there's your ventilation. And just before you increase your ventilation, there's your VT1. So this is easy breathing, starting to get a little bit harder, and you haven't actually quite reacted yet, but the algorithm has figured out that you've hit your VT1 at that intensity. Now you start to breathe faster and harder and faster and harder and faster and harder, and then you get to this VT2, and now you are almost losing control of how you can coordinate your breathing, and that's your VT2. These numbers correspond very tightly to what you can do in long-term athletics. So if you go over this threshold of VT2 and you're getting close to your VT2 max, that's a very time-limited duration that you could actually sustain that. And you know that because if I set you at 200 watts on the treadmill and said, go for as long as you can, realistically, at this point in your training, 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And that's super easy to see from the data. I know that anybody I push over VT2, 2-3 minutes, if they're super motivated and they have a ton of people cheering for them, they might be able to last 3 to 5 minutes. But after that, they're going to be really, really, really uncomfortable and they're going to want to slow the treadmill down.
Yeah.
Below VT2 is sustainable effort. It's hard. And the closer you get to that threshold, the harder it's going to be. So if I take you just below 200 watts and 190, it's going to be really hard for you because you're just below your threshold. And this might be the pace that you could run your 5K or 3K or a 5K. And some people with good training can sustain that kind of effort for 10K and even for the elite athletes, a half marathon.
Wow.
And this again comes down to how do you train the body for the event you're doing to be able to sustain this? And what these people need is they need the ability to breathe deep and fast for the duration of their event. So those world record pacers for the half marathons who are running a half marathon now in under an hour, they're able to hold this intensity for them, which is crazy because it's faster than 4-minute mile pace for an hour.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, it is absolutely shocking, right? Now, the further we move down below the threshold, the easier it is going to be to sustain that. So this pace down here is for you is going to be your 10K pace somewhere down in here. And this pace down here is really sustainable forever, right? You can walk forever. There's no challenge to this. When you get close to this VT1, there's a little bit of a challenge for you. And it may end up being that that threshold becomes where your marathon pace is sustainable. Because as soon as you get over that VT1, you're going to actually start pushing your respiratory system to the point that you might not be able to sustain it for the whole duration of the marathon, which for you, we're talking about 4 hours, 4.5 hours. It's a long time to be moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so these thresholds are going to be indicators of what you can potentially do for those long durations. So now we talk about, okay, well, that's roughly where you're at right now. How do we make you better? We try different training methods to improve these numbers and push these thresholds up this way so that you can do higher and higher intensities without challenging your respiratory system. And that's how we're going to know whether the training is actually working or not, is because we'll be able to see it in these numbers.
Which is fascinating that you can see. But it also, I'll let you get into as much as you want to, but it also was kind of fascinating that I needed to, my particular thing was that I don't train at a nice slow rate on the lower end of things. And so that was like something I needed to focus on. And it's really funny how hard that is to do and how humbling that is to do.
This is a big challenge, especially we've talked a little bit about the sort of Peloton history and things, and how the majority of people who do Peloton are really committed to that super high intensity, relatively short duration of 45 minutes to an hour, because that's what they can squeeze into their work days and their family lives and all the other craziness in their worlds. And that 45 minutes to an hour is great training and it's great exercise. But if you're really training for a half marathon or a marathon or a Gran Fondo for cyclists, that are, it's going to last 4 or 5 hours, those hour-long intensity sessions are probably higher intensity than you need and not long enough to actually generate the changes to your body that we need to be able to help support you for that 3 and 4 hour event. And that's exactly what happens to people. And you can see this. So this is your heart rate and your VO2 curve. And we'll just go back to this quickly, because what happens is this is your walking pace. These first couple steps were walking. And then I kind of call these ones wogging paces, or half walking, half jogging. And you don't really know what feels better. You can either do a brisk walk or a really slow jog, but it feels uncomfortable. And then you get into a jogging pace and they're like, okay, this feels better. And now I'm into a running pace, and everything after this, you can't try and walk. It's running.
Yeah.
You have this fascinating curve, and it happened in all of your tests. Exactly the same thing happened. You have this heart rate that's stable and slow during your warm up. You can see your heart rate drifts up and down a little bit. And then it starts to climb as the steps go up, and it climbs slowly until it gets to here. And then there's this rapid increase in heart rate. So despite having this steady steps increase in intensity, your heart rate dramatically increases. And this is really where you went from walking to running.
Yep.
These intensities here, you're super inefficient at. So you're really efficient walking. And the reason walking is so successful for people is because it uses very little energy. You always have one foot on the ground. And that transfer of weight is super efficient because you don't have to bound. You don't have to use any elastic energy. All the other things that happen with jogging is taken away, and you have this really good efficiency walking. So if you want to go a long distance, your best thing to do is walk.
Well,
as soon as you start jogging, you start requiring a ton of more energy. And that's why most people can't run. And that's why marathon runs have become so popular, because it's a huge challenge. And it's because we've gone from the super easy, sustainable method of moving, which is walking, to a much more challenging way of moving, which is running. And the fascinating thing about marathons is that you can train for decades and decades and still get better and better. And we see this all the time in world records being dropped by 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds and 70-year-olds. There's a new world record last year by a 70-year-old who's running well under 3 hours for his marathon at 70. And that is just a indication that the changes that happen to help you become a more efficient runner, you can do for 10, 20, 30 years, which is why it makes it so much more enjoyable for athletes, is because they can actually start running at whatever age they are and they can continue to improve for 10 or 20 years. And you don't see track athletes starting training at 50, because you can only get faster at 100 meters for a couple of years maybe, and then you've maxed out what you can potentially do, but you can't max out what you can do at a marathon until you've actually trained at it for 10 or 20 years.
Well, that sets me up perfectly for the next question. And that's this probably the last question that we have time for. And that is, what exactly should my goals be, my long-term goals? I mean, yes, you're saying, okay, I can do this New York City marathon. You have confidence I can do that. And I could walk it because I walked 21 miles. I know I can do it. But you're saying that I should have, like, I can actually, like, run this whole thing. In theory,
I think that was the fun goal, is to actually. So the specific answer for you, because we haven't actually done enough tests to know how fast I think you can run a marathon or jog a marathon. But I think the goal should be to run a marathon. Okay. That's the first goal, because it's something that lights, that you said would light you up. And I said, choose a goal that's going to light you up. And you said, New York Marathon 2024. And I said, if that lights you up, then that's all that really matters. Choose a goal that lights you up. And your goal was to run a marathon. And I said, are we running it? And you said, I finished a marathon, but I had to walk the whole thing. I said, all right. So our goal is to run a marathon. I think that's fantastic. I think it's aspirational. I think it's inspirational. I think it's super fun to be able to work with. So right now I can tell you, I know from this data, you could walk a marathon. That is not a problem for you. You're super efficient and you have enough VO2 max and you have enough ability to breathe and to move that you can move a marathon. That's not a problem for you. The question is, how fast can you do it? And can we get you to the point where this loss of efficiency right around here at this 150, 160 watts, where you actually start jogging, can I help you make this intensity sustainable for 4 hours or 5 hours or however long you need? And again, some of that will depend on how hilly the course is or on all the other pieces. But right now, I know you can do this, and this is your VT1. I know you can do this for hours, but right now that's at a walking pace. So in training, our goal is going to be to move your VT1, your ventilatory threshold one, that level that you can sustain easy breathing, up to this jogging pace. Ooh. And if I can match that, if I can get your easy breathing to a jogging pace, I will be able to confidently say that I have confidence that you can run a marathon for the whole time.
Wow.
So that's the simple thing that we're going to do. It's how we're going to get there is, might be complicated and it's going to take time, but we're going to move. That's the goal, is to move this threshold up to a jogging pace.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing us do that. I am super excited about it. For a little bit of background for folks, you've had me focusing on kind of a lower intensity. So I've been trying to keep my heart rate around 140 and doing an hour long workout. It's basically been a walk jog, depending on if it's hilly, 4 to 5 times a week. And I haven't been able to test. I tested like 3 times, but this last week, since we were gone, I haven't tested again. But I will say that last week, I felt like it was easier when I was out. Like I got further on without having to walk on my usual route. And I thought that was encouraging.
So maybe that's what we'll talk about next time. And I'll just tell people really quickly how we pulled out those numbers. Those numbers aren't just pulled out of nowhere, right? So here's the heart rate 140. And if you go across here, that's it hits this red line about halfway between your ventilatory threshold one and your ventilatory threshold two. And it's also the pace that you started to become somewhat less rapidly increasing your heart rate, right? So you rapidly increased heart rate from 120 to 140, and then it started to settle a little bit before it started to get too hard. So it was in the mid-range between VT1 and VT2, and it was a joggable pace on flat ground. So I knew it was sustainable from a breathing pattern for a period of time. I didn't know how long you'd be able to sustain that, but it would be sustainable. And it was also, interestingly enough, a little bit of a plateau of where your ventilation was. So when you were breathing, you had this long, steady, stable breathing pattern. Then you had an increase and then it flattened again. And again, that's that same intensity at heart rate 140. It's right here. Your breathing wasn't too fast. It was breathing about 30 breaths a minute. And we're going to start working on that. So we are going to work on getting you faster at this pace by training in that range and making you feel more comfortable there. And the next step is we're going to start focusing on how you're breathing to get that intensity. And so that's going to be the fun part of using the equipment, the VO2 Master, to actually not test where you are at the max, but to actually look and help you give you feedback of how you're breathing at that intensity. So one of the training sessions that you're going to do coming up, you're going to wear the monitor and you're going to actually look at the numbers while you're running at this pace.
Oh.
And you're going to see how fast and how deep you're breathing. Because last time you were here, you were breathing 2 liters per breath and 30 breaths a minute. And I want you to start breathing 2.5 breaths, liters per breath and 25 breaths a minute. So you're going to start slowing your breathing down, even though you're running at the same pace, just by taking slightly deeper breaths.
Fascinating. I can't wait to do more. Andrew, thank you so much for doing this, for all of it and the explanation and taking all of your very valuable time. You are a very busy man. Not only does he do this, he's like an anesthesiologist during the day. So like you are a very, very busy man and we appreciate your time so much.
It's really fun to do this and be on this journey with you. I'm looking forward to more conversations.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that brings this episode to a close. I know we said we were trying to make them shorter, but we actually ended up landing on one with a very long interview. But you will really notice in the weeks ahead that they start to contract.
Yes, you will. Yeah. Yes, you will.
So until next week, where can people find you?
People can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/CrystalDOKeefe. They can find me on all social media at Clip Out Crystal and, of course, the Peloton platform at Clip Out Crystal.
And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/TheClipOut. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget our Patreon now. $5 a month gets you everything, ad-free episodes, early releases, and the Clipped Out for only $5 a month, and it helps pay for fancy microphones that don't sound like shit. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, keep pedaling
and running
and rowing.